This is the Tom Hartman Program.
Greetings, my friends, patriots, lovers of democracy, truth, and justice, believers in peace, freedom, and the American way. Sean, I'm hearing my own voice back in my ear. You got to figure out how to stop that. Anyhow, we're going to have a fascinating show today, and Louise and I are, as I mentioned last week, Louise and I are in Orlando, and we're at a seminar that is being taught by Dr. Richard Bandler and John Laval and Kathleen Laval about neurolinguistic programming, NLP, and we're going to get to that later in the program. But obviously the big news is that last night Donald Trump made public a decision that he had probably made, probably debated it, in fact, when he put Neil Gorsuch on the Supreme Court, although I suspect that Gorsuch was kind of a done deal that was given to him by Mitch McConnell, and Mitch McConnell said, this is what you're going to do. It's got to be this way. But the simple reality is that Brett Kavanaugh, back in 2008, in one of the law journals, no, it's not fixed, in one of the law journals, argued, and I will read it to you. He said, having seen firsthand, now keep in mind, this guy, Brett Kavanaugh, he was one of the lawyers who helped John Roberts, who's also on the Supreme Court, organize the legal case that was taken to the Supreme Court in 2000 by George W. Bush's lawyers arguing that they should ignore the results of the election in Florida, or that they should continue with blocking the recount that the Florida Supreme Court had required. Now, these are guys who claim that they love states' rights, right? And this should tell you everything you need to know about Brett Kavanaugh. Although we'll get to just a minute how he says lawyer, Trump can't be sued or indicted or any of that kind of stuff, which is what everybody's focusing on. But I think this is actually the most important part, and what you need to know about, and what you know America should be knowing about, is that the argument, for those of you who were not like paying attention to politics in November, December, and January, throughout the whole month of November and December, and I think this got resolved very early in January. It must have been in December, but whenever it was resolved. Florida, the vote in Florida was 536 votes that George Bush won by, according to the, quote, official vote. And then they discovered that in Volusia County, which was using electronic voting machines, the votes for Al Gore, as they were being reported throughout the day, were going down. I don't mean George Bush was getting more votes. I mean the number of votes for Al Gore was actually decreasing. They'd say, at 10 o'clock in the morning, according to the voting machines, Al Gore had 22,000 votes. By 1 o'clock, he only had 16,000 votes. Well, that's impossible, right? You can't vote negative. But that's, that's what happened. So that was in Volusia County, number one. Number two, you had the down in Broward and in much of the state, you had these punch card voting that was very, very badly designed. It was very confusing. But not only that, you had these, to punch it out, you had to punch out this little piece of paper. And by the way, feel free to call on any topic you'd like. I'm going to open the phone lines here, 202-808-9925. Because it's just going to be you and me for the first hour and a half, but I want to give you my take on this. I'd love to get your thoughts on it, on this whole issue of the Supreme Court. So they had these, they had the hanging chads, pregnant chads, pimpled chads, dimpled chads. What that meant was you had this little push pin that you had to push through the paper that said who do you want to vote for, and underneath that was this cardboard card, and you would pop the little pre-punched square out of the card. Well, some of them didn't pop all the way, so they kind of dangled. Some of them only pushed, but they didn't pop it. So those are called dimpled chads or pimpled chads. And so you had hanging chads, and you had the dimpled chads. And so the machine that they would feed these cards through to count them got all clogged up because of the pimpled chads in particular and the hanging chads. And on some of them, there was also a place for write-in at the very bottom where you would actually write it on the cardboard thing. And so some people would, like, punch Al Gore, and then down at the bottom where it said president, they would write Al Gore, or George Bush, for that matter. And so the decision was made in different counties whether or not to even count those ballots because they weren't, quote, properly filled out. Now, none of this even considers the fact that just 3 months before the election, Jeb Bush, George Bush's brother, had ordered Catherine Harris, the Secretary of State, to remove 80,000 people from the voting rolls in the black neighborhoods around Miami. So, you know, the Florida vote was totally screwed up. So when it came in at 536 votes for George Bush, that was so close to the margin of error that the Florida Supreme Court said, there has to be a recount. It's only a reasonable thing. It's only a logical thing. There has to be a recount. Tom DeLay was the Speaker of the House at the time in the U.S. House of Representatives, one of the most corrupt Speakers of the House ever. He had literally had guys sitting in his office day trading on inside information. And everybody in Tom DeLay's office was getting rich. Day trading, they would know which stock was going to go up and which stock was going to go down, particularly with defense contractors, because they knew which contracts were going to be assigned and when. These guys got insanely rich. So Tom DeLay had his crew, a bunch of his employees, you know, and lobbyists who were with him, fly down to Florida, where they were doing the recount that the Supreme Court of Florida had ordered, in this giant room, and people were looking, and you had a Democratic observer on one side, a Republican observer on the other side, and you had a vote counter who was actually, you know, an employee of the state, who was looking, you know, or somebody who had volunteered. I mean, these are the people who volunteer to help with elections. You know, they have different titles in different states, but basically, you know, the election helpers. And they were looking at these ballots and going, okay, you know, does this guy intend, you know, the big debate, intent of the voter. Did he intend to vote for George Bush or Al Gore? Because there's just a pimple here or a dimple on the chat. Or did he intend to vote for Al Gore? Because Al Gore is punched, but he also filled in the name, which is not the way you're supposed to do it. So should we go by the intent or should we go by the rules which say that you have to do, you can't, if you fill in a write-in name, then you, you know, theoretically, if it was different from whatever you punched, then you just throw the ballot out. So there was this huge debate about this. And the Supreme Court of Florida said, we're just going to redo it, and here's the rules. We're going to do it based on the intent of the voter, so you're going to actually count those people that you threw out. And it might have worked for Bush's benefit or for Gore's. And you're going, you know, and we're going to figure out what happened in Volusia County. And, you know, there were a few other abnormalities and anomalies that had happened in Florida. We're just simply going to recount the vote. It's going to take a month or so, but that's okay. We'll have it done by Christmas time. The new president doesn't get sworn in until the first Tuesday in January. We're in good shape. And John Roberts and Brett Kavanaugh went to Florida to help teach George Bush's lawyers. See, these guys, John Roberts and had clerked for Scalia, as I recall, and I'm pretty, no, no, John Roberts had clerked for Rehnquist, who was then the Chief Justice, and Brett Kavanaugh had clerked for Anthony Kennedy, who was on the court. So these two lawyers who had worked for two of the top Supreme Court justices, the Chief Justice and the swing vote, went to Florida to teach the lawyers what kind of language to use to influence Rehnquist and Kennedy. And this weirdly never came up during the hearings for John Roberts. I mean, we know it now. And I don't know if it'll come up during the hearings. And then, frankly, it's the kind of partisan thing that everybody tries to stay away from when they're all trying to behave very nonpartisan. But I think, number one, there was the payoff. Then number two, Brent Kavanaugh, wrote this thing. He said, this is from the Law Journal in 2008 that he actually wrote. He said, but before I read this, just to close the point that I was just making, this guy is partisan. right? I mean, you know, somebody who considers themselves an impartial judge or a lawyer doesn't go down and help George Bush hack an election, basically. And this guy did. So the Republicans are like, of course, right? I mean, this guy, you know, we'd love this guy. So you got that. Then he writes in the Law Journal back in 2008. He writes in this Law Journal because he worked with Ken Starr to impeach Bill Clinton. That's how partisan this guy is. And then in 2008, after it's all over, and after they lost, keep in mind, they lost. He writes, having seen firsthand how complex and difficult that job is, he's talking about being president of the United States, I believe it vital that the president be able to focus on his never-ending tasks with as few distractions as possible. The country wants the president to be, quote, one of us, end quote, who bears the same responsibilities of citizenship that all share. But I believe that the president should be excused from some of the burdens of ordinary citizenship, in other words, following the law and not being prosecuted when you break the law, while serving in office. Now, if you're Donald Trump, and you know that you've been, and I don't even want to give a post-hypnotic suggestion to that. Just think about Donald Trump. And he's looking at, you know, this dozen or two dozen judicial nominees that the Federalist Society, you know, the right-wing think tank that was organized as a result of the Powell Memo in 71 and largely funded by the Koch brothers and a bunch of other, you know, the Scaife Foundation and other right-wingers. He's looking at these judges that Republicans have to choose among because these are vetted by the billionaires. And he sees that there's this one guy who has said presidents shouldn't be able to be questioned or indicted. He's known that he was going to have Brett Kavanaugh through probably since Neil Gorsuch. Anyhow, we'll pick up your calls on the way back. Stick around. We'll be right. We'll be right back.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
We'll be back with your calls right after this break. Speeches given mostly by Republican congressmen in Congress on the floor of the House and the Senate talking about how we should not support England or Britain in their fight against Hitler and how Hitler's a guy we can work with and all this sort of thing. If you saw the Churchill movie, A Darkest Hour, this book will ring a lot of bells for you. It's out of print. There are used copies floating around. This is a copy my father gave me as a gift years ago. So, The Illustrious Dunderheads by Rex Stout. It's a collection of speeches, as I said. The first one is by George Bender, the Republican representative from Ohio. And this is July 11, 1940. I wish to call attention to the statement made by an expert, Colonel Lindbergh. Quote, let us not be confused by this talk of invasion by European aircraft. The air defense of America is as simple as the attack is difficult when the true facts are faced. We are in danger of a war today not because the European people have attempted to interfere with the internal affairs of America, but because American people have attempted to interfere with the internal affairs of Europe. Regardless of which side wins the war, there is no reason, aside from our own actions, to prevent a continuation of peaceful relationships between America and the countries of Europe. Then on September 3rd, 1940, he said, any device at all that suits the convenience of the president. Keep in mind, FDR was president, and the Republicans didn't want to fight against Hitler because they thought it would get FDR elected for a third term as a wartime president. That was what this was all about. Any device at all that suits the convenience of the president is used in order to get us into this war by the back door. The power of peacetime conscription in the hands of an administration that is proved by its record to have used every conceivable excuse for regimenting America, overturning all tradition, and changing our form of government is nothing but an invitation to disaster. We know that our people hate everything that Hitler stands for. We despise dictatorship in any form, but I challenge anyone to tell us the difference between executive orders issued by Roosevelt and those issued by Hitler. Republicans in 1940. There's more. This is from Hamilton Fish, Republican representative from New York State. This is June 22nd, 1940.
Colonel Lindbergh was right when he said in one of his recent speeches, let's us stop this hysterical chatter about calamity and invasion that has been running rife these past few days. It is not fitting to the people who built this nation. The only reason we are in danger to becoming involved in this war is because there are powerful elements in America who desire to take part in a war against Hitler. And then on June 22, 1940, he gave a speech at the House of Representatives. He says, let us have an end to the secret diplomacy and the secret commitments of President Roosevelt that have brought ruin and disaster to France and from which we have escaped only by a miracle and the will of the American people expressed through Congress to keep America out of war. This was the America First movement back then. President Roosevelt alarmed the nation by his inflammatory Italian dagger thrust in the heart speech. And on August 5th, Republican Representative Hamilton Fish said, whom do we fear? Do we fear Hitler, who seems afraid to attack England over 20 miles of sea when he would have 3,000 miles to cross here? This is preposterous, preposterous. Let us stop this fear hysteria. Tom Harvin here with you, and let's see here, pick up some phone calls, and let's start out with Denise. It's hard for me to read my computer here, it's just not quite as big as it normally is. In Clinton Township, Michigan, or is it Denise or Denzi?
Desi. I
forgot. Desi, I'm sorry, the type on my screen is just little teeny tiny. I gotta figure out how to make it bigger. In fact, I think I know how to do that. So anyhow, go ahead and talk. What's up? There we go.
Hey, Tom. I listen to you every day. I'm an Uber driver, so in between runs, I listen to you. I heard you earlier talking about the election debacle in Florida. I was around during that
right.
time. But to my estimation, it's happened two more times. I mean, the last two presidential elections, as far as I'm concerned, have been very suspicious.
At this point, I
have no faith in the electoral system, voting machines or anything like that. I know that if we're going to do anything, it's going to have to be overwhelming. There's going to have to be no doubt
yes.
about the fact who won.
But yeah, that's the thing, Desi, is that this is why Democrats won't talk about it. And, I've told this story on the air many times, so I won't go into great length, but I've had this conversation with a number of people, members of Congress, Democratic members of Congress. And, while Mark Pocan and Bernie Sanders agree with me, and they will talk about this on the air, there's a whole bunch of Democrats who are afraid that if we say, you know, these voting machines are not secure, our tabulators are not secure. We know that, for example, the Russians, successfully hacked into 15 or 20 of them in the last election, different states, and whatever it was, they didn't do anything, apparently, according to the scientists who can
really
hack.
I really don't believe that. Nobody's given us any proof that they did steal votes. How can you
yeah.
prove a negative?
I know, but the message we have to deliver is, number one, it's not safe and secure, but number two, exactly what you said, and you said it so well, we have to show up in overwhelming numbers. Forgive my interrupting you. Go ahead.
But I look at it like this. This America that we're living in, I have friends that voted for Trump and actually spent the 4th of July with them, and they have a block. I mean, it's a serious, I just can't get through it. It's like Obama, Hillary. And they will not acknowledge that the Russians have influenced our elections.
Well, it could have been the Russians. It could have been the Republicans, too. It could have been some billion-dollar corporation. We need to get these damn things out of our electoral system. Desi, thanks a lot for the call.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Call 202-808-9925.
I'll be back with more of your calls right after this break. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. So in my enthusiasm, I neglected to just kind of wrap up the story or finish the story.
about Brett Kavanaugh, John Stevens, and now two, assuming Kavanaugh gets a green light from the Senate and gets sworn in, two justices who helped George W. Bush become president. The way that happened was that the Supreme Court intervened and stopped the recount in Florida. So a consortium of news agencies, the New York Times, the Associated Press, and the company that owns USA Today, these, and there might have been one other company that was involved in this, they took all of the ballots, all the physical ballots from Florida, brought them up to New York in a semi-truck, and took a full year to count them. And in November of 2001, which unfortunately was about a month after 9/11, the New York Times published a piece. Now, keep in mind, Al Gore's original lawsuit at the Supreme Court in Florida was to simply recount three counties, Broward, Dade, and one other county. And so the headline was, if Al Gore's lawsuit had succeeded, he still would have lost, which was true. But if you counted the whole state, which is what the Florida Supreme Court had ordered, Al Gore won Florida by any measure. It's right there in the New York Times article. They buried it in the 17th paragraph, but it's right there. Now, why did they bury it? Well, I think it was Sulzberger, the publisher, later said, you know, we buried that because we didn't want George Bush to be seen as an illegitimate president a month after 9/11. The country was in a crisis. So just to finish this up, and then I'll get back to your calls because there's a lot of people who want to weigh in on this. Number one, Kavanaugh is clearly a partisan Republican, and that's what they want on the court. They don't care about judicial temperament and all this kind of crap. They want a partisan Republican. Number two, he thinks that presidents should not be indicted, prosecuted, or even questioned while they're in office. Although, you know, to give him some credit, he said Congress should pass a law saying this, and there is no law right now. So we're not sure how he'll rule on this, but I think we've got a good indication. And I'd bet $50 that was one of the questions that when Donald Trump sat down with him in private said, hey, you wrote this in the Law Journal in 2008. Do you still believe this? And Kavanaugh said, yeah, I sure do. And bang, that was when the decision was made. And number three, Kavanaugh told us last night when Trump introduced him, twice, as I recall, in his little thank you speech, that he was Catholic. Now, I've got nothing against Catholics. The court, weirdly, there's not a single Protestant, I believe, there's not a single Protestant on the court. They're all either Catholics or Jews. But nothing wrong with Catholics, except that, by and large, the Catholic Church, officially, Catholic doctrine is that abortion should be illegal. Abortion's illegal in Vatican City. Of course, Vatican City doesn't have any women who are citizens, but, you know, it's illegal there. Ireland, I remember they had the big vote and just, you know, recently legalized abortion. By saying I'm Catholic, my guess is what he was shouting out to the right-wing evangelical Protestants and the fundamentalist Catholics is that he would vote the way that everybody thought it should be voted on about abortion. So anyhow, that's my take on all that stuff. Let's get back to your calls. Brandon in Orlando. Hey, Brandon, what's up?
Hi, Tom. To relay there on Roe versus Wade, with precedent has been talked a lot about in the news. And I just want to get your opinion. I've been thinking about that a lot. In my opinion, because the Supreme Court does get cases wrong, for example, internment, shouldn't each case be looked at separately as it comes up? Or what's your opinion on precedent?
I don't know what you mean by shouldn't each case be looked at separately.
Well, if abortion does come back up to the Supreme Court, they were talking about, you know, they should just go ahead and acknowledge the previous ruling on it, based on precedent. So,
which is largely what they've done. Although they've dialed back some of Roe's protections, they've by and large, you know, established that. Given those protections, but the my take on Roe v. Wade is that the court shouldn't have made that decision. I don't think that, and I'm pro-choice, but I think that by making law, I mean, the court actually decided there are three trimesters in a pregnancy, according to the current state of knowledge of science, and we're going to set up different rules for each trimester. That's the job of the legislature. This was in 1973. I was alive and an adult in 1973, and I can tell you what was going on. In 61, the birth control pill was legalized. By 63, the birth control pill was widespread across America. In 65, you had the Connecticut versus whatever his name was, Griswold or Cunningham or whatever it was, which ruled that no state could ban birth control. In people's homes, because at that point in time, it was illegal for even a married couple to have a condom in their home in Connecticut. So all this stuff had changed. The America was in the midst of what was referred to as the sexual revolution. And in that context, in 73, we were having this debate now about abortion. And it worked its way up to the Supreme Court. And in my opinion, had the court not ruled in Roe v. Wade, we may still have a couple states where abortion is illegal, but the states around, just like you have some states where gun control is really intense, like New York, or let's say Chicago, but right next door in Indiana, you can drive, 40 minutes from downtown Chicago to Indiana and buy guns at the gun store right on the border, because Mike Pence made them really available. So there's no doubt in my mind that within a year or two at the very most, and yes, I realize there would have been some women who died in the process of it, but I think that we wouldn't be in this mess right now, that by the Supreme Court making law, which there's nothing in the Constitution that gives them the authority to do that, by the Supreme Court actually making law in Roe v. Wade, just like they made law in Dred Scott, and a number of others, by the way, since they acquired for themselves the power to do this in 1803 in the Marbury decision, by making that law, rather than us having congressional hearings, expert testimony, the public weighing in, people running for election and winning or losing based on the issue of whether abortion should be up to the states or whether it should be a federal issue or whether it should be legal or illegal. Because we did not go through that normal all-American legislative process. The Supreme Court did it instead, without authority and without right. In my opinion, that decision was not wrongly decided in as much as I think, abortion should have still been illegal. But I think that by 74 or 75, knowing the way the sexual revolution was going, and people were getting pregnant because everybody was having sex with everybody, and the birth control pills didn't always work in the first 5 or 6 years. They were just figuring the technology out. That I'm of the opinion that rapidly those laws would have been struck down by the Congress. And that would have short-circuited all the debate. You would not have had all this 20, 30, 40, however long it's been since 1973, wars basically going on in the United States about whether or not, Roe v. Wade should be overturned and all this other stuff. So, part of me thinks that even if this court overturns Roe v. Wade and says it's up to the states, they can make it illegal, that might, in the way that I just described, actually be a good thing. But I'm not in favor of it. But, the outcome could be good. Back to you, Brandon.
Well, that's a good point, and I agree with that. So with that, I'll let you go. Thanks, Tom.
You're welcome, Brandon. Thanks a lot for the call. If it's not turned on, Scott, you just flip up the bottom of the box. Here, I'll show you. Like this. Pop it open like this and push the on-off switch. Excuse me, we're going to have a guest in a little bit, and I'm getting him wired here. The things we do on remotes, right? We have to do this stuff. Dave in Federal Way, Washington. Dave, what's on your mind?
I want to try to make my point based on something you just said. You just said that we don't really know who interfered in the election. It could be Russia. It could be Republicans. Now, and you're right, but how this ties into the selection of Kavanaugh is there's this guy, Leonard Leo. He's in the Federalist Society. He's been very influential in picking these conservative justices for the Supreme Court.
Right. He's the main guy there who does this. Yeah.
Yeah. Now, they've already, conservatives have already protected him by saying any criticism of him is related to religious bigotry. Now, you know, because he's Catholic, and he's a Knights of Malta guy. Now, none of this really matters, his religiosity. What matters is Leonard Leo recognized that our society is becoming more liberal, all right? And because our society is majority liberal, the only way to stop what he sees as descending into some sort of biblical sin is to have a unified executive, the unitary executive theory that was, you know, put out by George Bush and also fundamentally believed by Brett Kavanaugh.
Oh, it goes back to Hamilton.
Yes, and what this will do is stop our descent into sin as a society, right? Well, the problem with this is, all right, their hearts, you can argue their hearts are in the right place trying to protect us all, right? But the problem is we become illiberal. Russia is opposed to our national interest because they can provide for an illiberal government around the world. I mean, there's nothing we can do about it.
They're always going to put their own national interests ahead of ours, as is China. I mean, China may have hacked our elections too. We need to find this out. I'm not saying it didn't happen. I want the damn investigation to finish.
Yes, and I'm just trying to say what the consequences are. Our national interests are eventually going to come into conflict, and we will have no tacit moral imperative. All right, it will be a straight up. All right, if we're supporting illiberal policies around the world, like in Iraq, that's what Muqtada al-Sadr is complaining about. He's saying America is trying to pervert their election, which his bloc, his political bloc, clearly won. Okay, now if we support illiberal.
By the way, for people who don't know what you're talking about, if I may very very quickly, Dave, Muqtada al-Sadr is the Shia mullah who ran a large chunk of downtown Baghdad that fought with American soldiers for years and years and years. Go ahead.
Yes, if we plant our flag with an illiberal regime, not a democratic republic, if we do not promote our ideals and we plant our flag with that regime, and Russia and China plant their flag with opposing regimes, it's going to be a straight-up slugfest. It's going to be numbers. It's going to be, just firepower.
What's the it's that you're talking about, in the United States or in Iraq? Because that's already happening in Iraq.
Well, I mean, you often talk about Iran. That's, you know, and I tend to agree with you. It's going to happen in Iran or North Korea, perhaps. But the bottom line is we are going to come into conflict with, the states that are within the sphere of influence of the Shanghai Cooperative. And we're illiberal. We have no fundamental.
So bring this back to the Supreme Court, because that's our topic here, Dave, and that's where you started.
I'm sorry, with Justice Kavanaugh now in the unitary executive, which I guarantee he's going to support, we no longer have a democratic republic. We're some sort of hybrid. We are some sort of hybrid, and it is dangerous, because in a straight-up slugfest, I don't think we can beat the Shanghai Cooperative. They just have more numbers and more firepower.
I don't disagree with you, Dave, and that's another piece of this puzzle. It's an important one. Thanks for the call. Wayne in Albuquerque, New Mexico. Hey, Wayne, what's up?
Oh, hey, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. I have a Mueller-Kavanaugh question. I know you're really good at seeing relationships. Naturally, those of us who are watching are disappointed in the pace of the Mueller investigation. He's seemingly the best check to Trump's exercise of power. So if the Mueller investigation weren't so mired in delays, wouldn't we be now focused on indictments and charges rather than on North Vietnam or Brett Kavanaugh or further tax cuts for corporations?
I don't think so, Wayne. I think that we need to. I think that everything is going to change when Mueller's report came out. And a lot might change when Mike Flynn starts singing. But we'll see. It's a good question, Wayne. Thanks a lot for the call. We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman. Visit TomHartman.com for audio and video archives.
We'll be back with more of your calls. It's coming up on 10 minutes before the hour. Stick around. I'm back on the air. Excuse me. Okay, welcome back. Anita in San Antonio, Texas. Hey, Anita, you're on the air. What's up? It says here you want to disagree with me about Roe.
Yes, I disagree. I don't think Roe v. Wade was decided wrongly. It was based on right to privacy, which Griswold was based on. And if
I agree.
Left these kind of decisions, no, but my point is that we can't leave these kind of decisions up to the legislature. Then we'd have to, and then I guess you disagree about Brown v. Board also, right? You also think...
Yes, I think that... Yeah, and I disagree with all the decisions that you and I both hate that the Supreme Court has made that have handed more and more power to rich people and corporations. Well, the Supreme Court should not be making law. When Brown v. Board happened, America was changing.
Well, look, but it was changing, but it hadn't changed to that point.
Now, with regard to, if I may, Anita, real quick, let me just insert something that may change, that may recalibrate your thinking slightly, and then you can talk all you want about it, okay? With regard to Roe v. Wade, if the court had simply said, you know, laws that limit a woman's right to an abortion are illegal, period, end of discussion, let the states figure out how they want to calibrate this understanding, then, frankly, I would not be quite so opposed to it because it wouldn't be writing law. But when they came up with the whole three trimester thing, that literally is the job of legislatures. It's in the Constitution. Back to you, Anita.
Well, okay. Well, that part of it may be true. I don't really know enough about the total decision. I do know that it was based on the right to privacy, as was Griswold. And Brown versus Board of Education was also, I've heard you say you thought they were writing law because of Brown v. Board.
Brown v. Board is a little more complex.
That's right. It was based on viability. That's true. And what this just says is it's white male privilege. Because all those decisions you're talking about don't affect white males. And I just it just really bothers me when I hear you say that. Because, you know, for people like, for women and for people of color, those are important decisions. And if we'd have based those on our legislatures, they probably would not have been decided the way they are. And if they would have been, it would have taken years. And people would have really been hurt.
No, I absolutely understand. And in fact, I said that. I said, you know, if the court had punted on Roe, I think that the legislatures, the federal legislature and the state legislature, although I don't believe that there was a federal law against abortion at that time, but state legislators would have changed. But the women would have died in the meantime from getting back alley abortions. I acknowledge that. But I'm telling you right now, you've got states where you can't get an abortion, you know, without driving 300 miles and waiting 3 days. And a lot of people don't have the time and money for that. Back alley abortions are back with a vengeance right now. And I think you can, one of the reasons for that is Roe. Now, with regard to Brown v. Board, I think I shouldn't have said that I disagreed with Brown v. Board and that I think it was wrongly decided. I need to go back and read Brown v. Board and figure out what the basis of that was. That may have been a fine decision. Let me stop myself right there. But back to you, Anita.
I just think we've just had terrible Supreme Court justices because we've had terrible presidents picking them.
Yeah, I agree with you on that. I absolutely agree with you. Anita, thank you for the call. And thank you for the always civil conversations, even when we disagree. I really treasure that. Thank you. We'll be back. Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you, and we are talking about Brett Kavanaugh and the Supreme Court and all this other kind of stuff. Diane in Chicago. Hey, Diane, what's on your mind?
Hi, Tom?
Yeah.
Hello? Oh, hi. Okay,
hi.
The cure for the voting thing is NCR paper, no machines. Paper ballots secured at the top. Copy for the voter, copy for the precinct captains when they're counting the votes afterwards, a copy for the state, a copy for the election office, and then everybody's numbers better match up.
I agree with you. And if they want to use technology, I don't have an objection to a voting machine that produces a paper ballot that all it is a fancy printer. You look at the paper ballot after it comes out of the voting machine. You touch the things on the screen. You get the paper ballot. That paper ballot is what gets counted. You look at it, double check it, and put it in the box. And then it can be read by a scanner. But the big caveat is, I want those voting machines and those scanners and the tabulators that put together the scanners to be owned and operated by the government, and I want the software to be open source so everybody in America can see how that software works. Does that make sense, Diane?
Sort of, but I worked elections for a long time, and I don't trust machines at all, period.
Yeah, yeah, okay, I get it. That's why I'm saying open source. It means
they could have a scanner to run for each place to run it through to get the voting counted faster at each place that gets it, and then all the numbers better add up to the same thing. But having anything
exactly, because the scanners can be hacked too, and we need to have audits and periodic tests and a certain percentage of the vote on every vote, and it needs to vary from time to time because you can program a machine to not have a 2% variation.
Right.
We have to have election integrity. Thanks a lot for the call, Michael in Chicago. Let's get back to Kavanaugh. What's on your mind? Michael, you're on the air in Chicago. Okay, let's try Dave in upstate New York. Dave, what's up?
Hey, Tom, thanks for taking my call. I just wanted to get your opinion on the whole deal with Kavanaugh in specific reference to Roe v. Wade. Now, we all know everybody's scared that, with the right-leaning conservatives on the bench, there is the big possibility that decision could be overturned. Is that fear unwarranted? And I ask you because I'm thinking with the Republican Party that it's in the state that it's in, it's really fixing to lose pretty big in 2018.
I think it's highly likely that they'll overturn it, and I think that the backlash, now that women are energized, will fix that problem. It's going to be a lot of pain in the middle. But frankly, with Kavanaugh, I'm far more worried about his turning America into a fascist nation with a unitary presidency and handing power to corporations. Those are my issues. We'll be back.
You're listening to Tom Hartman.